I'm just imagining someone just being like super uncomfortable with when they're getting like turned on.
I'm sort of imagining Beavis and Butthead. I'm imagining this just like
jitters.
Yeah. I mean, and I say that from experience. I identify as a Beavis for sure sexually.
Welcome back to another episode of KCRW's How's Your Sex Life? I'm your host, Maisha Battle. Today, I'm joined by our guest, Tina Horn. Tina is a BDSM educator and writer. She also hosts Why Are People Into That?, a podcast that explores sex, kink, and gender. It's so good, and it's being turned into a book that'll be out later this year. Tina, thank you so much for being here. I feel very honored and privileged to be sharing space with you again. Before we dig into our listener questions, can I ask you a question?
Of course, I would love that.
How's your sex life?
Oh, I think that people are surprised when I say that I'm quite private about my sex life, because like my ass, like literally and figuratively, my ass is out.
Yeah. And your handle on Instagram is Tina Horn's Ass.
That's right. You can follow it wherever asses are followed. I mean, also my sex life, I identify as a sexual extrovert, right? So I am in some ways an exhibitionist about some things more than others, meaning that I love to be watched and get off on being watched. And I'm an attention whore. and I charge for paying attention to me. It's very valuable. But I also identify as a sexual extrovert in the sense that like my community and culture and so much of my life is about sex. So yeah. You ask me, how's my sex life? Like I've watched a lot of great porn lately. I've read a lot of great books about sex, including yours. I listen to a lot of podcasts about sex, including yours. Like, you know, living in LA, I get to go to rep theaters and get to see like old sexploitation movies. I go to sex parties. I also go to leather bars where it's not necessarily like a sex party, but it, you know, other people are being sexually extroverted. And like, so yeah, art and even like platonic friendships are very much in my life, like about having the kind of conversations that we're going to have today. So yeah. Not to be cagey, but there are parts of my sex life that are not available for consumption that are fucking fabulous. And you'll never know because it's not work material.
Yes. I've been nodding vigorously because one, I'm pretty similar, you know. We might get into this about like the politics even of like sharing certain things about your sex life on social media and how much you can do that without being punished.
Yes.
So
we can certainly talk about that.
But that's never been my route. I am more of a private person too. So it's funny, yesterday I was having dinner with a friend and she told me that, you know, she was talking about me with other friends and was like, oh, she's great. Like, you know, she's a sex coach and whatever. And then this other like friend of a friend was like, well, does she have a great sex life? As if that's the only thing that would make me good at my job, right? Like, I do think that there's, and also when we say sex life, like, what does that mean? Like, to me, you just described a fantastic sex life that's right. Very robust, that's very diverse.
And it's like, yeah, my life is definitely devoted to sex.
Yeah.
I have a very devotional relationship to sex.
Which a lot of people don't. And one of the things that I try to do with my clients is get them from thinking about sex as this thing that's like other, that's like separate from, that they can't integrate into their life, to like just make your life more erotic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like have an erotic life. There are studies where people on their deathbeds are like, I wish I had more sex, or I wish I just like told people what I liked because I might have gotten it, you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, so I want people to have more robust sex lives like this. And I don't think it's a cagey answer at all. I think it's a very respectful answer.
I think that in the like sexpert world, which is a term that I really don't like, actually.
Same.
as much of a fan of portmanteaus as I am, like, I feel like there is this sort of expectation that, like, you've reached nirvana, like, so some sort of erotic nirvana. And I don't think I even want to reach erotic nirvana. I like friction and conflict and rejection and disappointment. That is, like, part of what makes a beautiful sex life. It's the shadow that creates dimension.
I'm just giving that a healthy pause that it deserves. No, that's beautiful. I really value your perspective. I'm really glad that you took the conversation that way. And I hope that many more people decide to have, just start to dabble. Like, you know, it's a new year. Just start to dabble in something new and explore sex from a different angle. Like, don't let it always be coming at you from the same angle every single time. I know that sounds... Maybe I mean it both ways. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Mix it up. Always come at me from my good side.
Yes. Okay, so you put a call out to your followers on social, so did we, for questions. And we're ready to dish out some advice, I think.
Great.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I'm so ready to collaborate with you on this.
Yay. Okay, so let's dig in. This question came from one of your followers.
Mm-hmm. Since I started testosterone, I'm hornier, but I have less libido. I think it's mental, but I don't know how to overcome it. Do you have any advice?
Yeah. First of all, I want to say I'm no doctor. Unfortunately, there's a lot of doctors who still have a lot to learn about trans healthcare. I also am not personally on hormone replacement therapy. I have a lot of friends who are. So I definitely am not able to answer this question from any kind of medical expertise. I guess my first recommendation is I want to make sure that everyone is having conversations about everything related to their sex life with as many of their friends as possible. Yeah. And even if you have, like, certain friends that, like, maybe you have sex with them, maybe you used to, maybe you hope to in the future, maybe you don't, but, like, sort of platonic conversations about everything related to sexuality, especially if your sexuality is marginalized by society and there's so much misinformation and disinformation out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to start there.
I love that caveat. And I agree. I think that we can talk about this a little bit from personal experience of the ebbs and flows of hormonal charge that we get as cis women. Mm-hmm. And then also I want to add the layer of, like, what testosterone does to a body. Here's the thing. With cis men, their testosterone cycle, which is their main driver for sex, is on a 24-hour cycle.
Isn't it, though?
So it feels endlessly replenished just by their natural cycle. So when you have someone going through hormone therapy, they're getting that input of testosterone, maybe even on a more consistent basis, you know, depending on levels, depending on where they are in their process. So this person says they're horny, but they have low libido. And I kind of want to parse that out because sometimes I think those two do get conflated.
Yeah, how would you define the difference between those two things without following up about this person's definition? Like,
yeah,
just for you, how would you make that distinction?
If I'm trying to kind of, like, distinguish those two, like, horny is like that, like, I just, like, even the tingle in the genitals, like, okay, like, something's going on here.
Yeah, ants in your pants.
Ants in your pants, like, oh, man. And it feels like a motivator towards sex. But libido feels more like, okay, I have low libido. Like, it's like a chronic... You know, I just don't have access to this, or I do have access to this. I think of this as like when I think about psychology and they talk about, like, your mood versus your emotions. Emotions are the sort of, like, daily conditions, and then mood is this like overarching season, you know? So that could be a distinction. And we're being fussy here too. And we're just trying to parse out what this person means. If I were to like try to distinguish those two things, I think people use those terms interchangeably, but maybe this person means like, generally speaking, I don't have a high libido, meaning I'm like not motivated to like go fuck a partner.
Like more like the drive. Like the drive. Sex drive.
Yeah. Like it's just not there. But like I can go to a work meeting and be turned on. And that's the tea. That's the tea talking.
Right, right.
That's my impression of what this person is going through.
I mean, like I said, I'm no doctor, but I'm gonna prescribe a healthy solo sex routine.
Same.
I'm just like, I mean, listen, I'm cis and I'm not on HRT, and I like jerking off for me is absolutely like it's stress relief, it's exercise, it's like getting all the happiness hormones going, it's good for my brain, it's good for, you know, and like it makes me more manageable for other people in all of my relationships because I'm like taking care of my high sex drive.
Yes. And there is a link between solo sex and sex drive. Mm. So if we're talking about this person having low libido, actually introducing a solo practice that's like pretty regular.
Yeah.
Perhaps this is nightly when you come home from work and you kind of like have a wind down that you want to add this into the routine. You know, that can actually have a long-term effect because you are giving yourself permission to engage in, you know, your sexuality on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And that often in my sex coach training, it was called priming the pump, you know, or like, yeah. it's, you're just kind of like working that muscle. Like you said, it's like exercise, right?
Yeah. Keeping it greased.
Yeah. So keeping things greasy and
keep it greasy. And then, that's the Tina Horn way for sure.
And then, you know, that could actually give you that boost. So you're not like experiencing what I'm just imagining someone just being like super uncomfortable with when they're getting like turned on.
Yeah, I'm imagining a very like, I'm sorry, writer, but like I'm sort of imagining Beavis and Butthead. I'm imagining this just like
jitters.
Yeah. I mean, and I say that from experience. I identify as a Beavis for sure sexually.
All right. So I think like, yeah, for this person, we want them to just start to like expel that energy. Like you're getting hits from T that like this is what your body is wanting. And whether you're dating somebody, you know, or you're solo, like you can masturbate and have that as a practice to actually hopefully boost that libido a little bit. So it feels like not like the two are at odds with each other.
Totally.
I think that's fair. Okay.
Cool.
And that is an excellent place for us to take a break. When we come back, we're going to hear from someone who needs help keeping things fresh in a kink relationship, which I know you know a thing or two about.
Me?
Tina will be sticking around for that, so stay close. And we're back. Tina, this question came from one of your followers. Let's listen in.
I'm a mommy dom in a 24/7 relationship with my baby sub. Do you have any tips for me on how I can stay creative in our relationship?
Of course this came from your audience.
Listen. You know, you gotta like give what you take.
That's right. So I think first, let's dive into what is this dynamic here? What is mommy dom, baby sub? Like, what are we actually describing here? 24/7 relationship? Mm-hmm. What does that mean?
Okay. I'm so glad you asked. So in the BDSM or leather, kink, or fetish communities, there's a long tradition, and actually very specifically comes from queer leather. So kinky, queer people, definitely countercultures that emerged in the 20th century, where there are power dynamics, right? That's a big part of BDSM. And sometimes you have a dominant and a sub, and that there can be as many different styles or flavors of that as like flavors of ice cream. And one of those flavors is the daddy boy or daddy girl or mommy boy, mommy girl, whatever. And these identities can be held by anyone of any gender. They're sort of archetypes that are bigger than someone's actual gender identity. They're like tarot cards. And to be very clear up front, these dynamics have nothing to do on a literal level with abuse or incest.
So these are not actual biologically related.
Or even like, and we can talk about faux-cest porn. It's not even like your stepmom or mm-hmm. your father figure. These are dynamics that people are invoking. And the reason that they invoke them is that a mommy dom or a daddy top is identifying that way to send a signal to potential compatible partners that they are a more nurturing kind of dominant, right? Okay.
Even so, with daddy doms?
Definitely. Absolutely.
Okay.
More nurturing. And, you know, daddies can be strict. Daddies can be disciplined and structured, but a sort of more like a mistress dominant or the like dommiest dom from Dom Town. It may be like I'm very sadistic. I'm very maybe even like cold and aloof, right? And so the expectation with a mommy or a daddy is that they are going to be more nurturing. And sometimes in queer community, that also is even the idea of like a house mother in ballroom, the idea of chosen family, right? The idea that you may be excommunicated from your family of origin because of who you are, but when you're here, you're family, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where that tradition comes from. And I think that we are seeing, and I do write about this in my book, Why Are People Into That? I do think that we're seeing something that happens a lot where extreme fetishes, even things that invoke something as dark as an allegory, as non-consensual abuse of an exploitation of incest, then they become allegories in the fetish world. And then you'll have people who are identifying as leather daddies who are like, no, this has nothing to do with like my dad. No, that's weird. Why would you say that? Yeah. Right. And then it kind of becomes part of the mainstream and gets appropriated to the point that I'm sure a lot of our listeners are very familiar. I feel like it gets more and more popular every year where people are like, you know, such and such celebrity is mother, or she's mothering so hard, or like she is like Pedro Pascal is daddy, right? Oscar Isaac is daddy and Sarah Paulson is mother, right? And so I think that, I don't know, everybody is looking for someone to reparent them. and so then in a kink relationship like this, where you might have a sub, or you might have a boy, you might have a gender neutral, there are like gender neutral terms like BOI, you know, that dynamic tends to be one that is about like, I'm dominating you. I'm submitting to you. We have that dynamic and that feedback loop because it's hot and we get off on that. But a lot of the time it's also about, it is kind of like coaching, like right. What you do. It is like the sub might be in service to their dominant. The mommy might be like, I'm gonna pick out your clothes for you, you know? And sometimes it's a contained role play. But in this case, it's 24/7, which means right. Just what it says, that there is an understanding that how sometimes that dynamic is going to be really intense, like during a scene where people are playing together, or like in the bedroom when they're fucking. And there are asexual versions of these kink dynamics for sure. But then however diffuse it gets in the rest of their lives, the idea is that that dynamic is always with them. Now, ethical players are going to be having discussions about what desires and boundaries and curiosities are going to be like going into this 24/7 agreement. And also, how are we going to signal to each other when we're really deep in that and when we're not, So there might be like a playful version of that in the grocery store that you or I would be like shopping next to that person and would have no idea what was zinging around between their heads and their eye contact in the produce section. Whereas it would be inappropriate if people were like fully playing in the produce section because I'm just trying to buy some melons, you know, like I'm just trying to feel those melons to see which one will be ready 2 days from today for my picnic, you know? So I know a lot of people who are in very functional, what I would consider to be very functional, very ethical 24/7 relationships. And like part of my definition of that as a friend of somebody who's in a 24/7 relationship is like, don't non-consensually involve me in your dynamic. Like just because you're that person's mommy and I'm their friend doesn't mean that you're my mommy.
Right. And that gets into, I think, like, this is a lot. Like, it would be a lot to navigate on a day-to-day basis. Like, where, you know, where the lines are. We don't know how long this person has been in this 24/7 dynamic with their partner.
That's true.
But they are deep enough in it to where they're like, shit, I'm out of ideas.
Amongst us,
right?
Like,
this sounds hard,
right? And that's the other element of this question: is creativity in a relationship, right? And what do you say for people who like don't have a connection between their like generative, creative side and their sexuality, or they have in the past but they're feeling like writer's block?
Yeah, I think that like I see a lot of people who get stuck in whatever sexual dynamic that they're in. And I think that the more narrow you make it, the harder it becomes. Some people are very generative within like very structured parameters.
Yes.
So I want to respect that. But I do think that when you like kind of go deep and narrow as mm-hmm. this listener, you know, this question asker is doing, I'm in this dynamic 24 hours a day. And I've got to keep coming up with ways to be in dynamic with them. There's a part of me that feels like maybe it's time to pause. You know what I mean? And like have a discussion about what the two of you want. And I know that like this dynamic is challenging because in the role of mommy dom, like, you know all, right? You're supposed to know all.
And you're expected to do so much invisible labor.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it calls for maybe a pause if you're feeling stuck because you may be taking on too much yourself, having to be the generator. Because what this dynamic does, because of these strict roles, is it limits how much dialogue there can be and how much collaboration. So whenever I have clients who are in just purely vanilla relationships and they're kind of stuck and they it's really funny that there are parallels here because it's like no matter what we decide to do, we are humans, we fall into patterns.
Totally.
We go with what works, quote unquote. And it's so easy to fall into that and just let that ride for as long as possible until one day you realize that what you've been doing that worked doesn't work anymore because you've done it so many fucking times. Yeah. And it's interesting to think about that in a situation where it seems so creative and so like anti vanilla mundane life, right? But it still comes with a very similar challenge of like, no, you've got to like put that energy and work in. So when I'm working with vanilla clients, it's about communicating, okay, well, where do we as a couple want to go? Is there new territory or is there territory that we forgot? There was stuff we used to do in the beginning of the relationship that kind of fell off because we got into this groove of like, okay, we're doing this. You came, I came, done, you know?
Yeah.
And then we don't, for instance, like kiss anymore or we don't do oral sex anymore or whatever. So are there things in the past that fell off that can be brought back afresh, anew, with these new bodies and these new scenarios that you have inevitably because that was the past and this is now? And also, what do we want to create in the future? So maybe the elements of the mommy dom that you brought to the table before, they really worked. But having to keep it up, you're noticing that you're just losing a lot of stamina. You're losing a lot of energy around this. maybe it's time to fucking, like, go mommy dearest. You know what I mean?
I'm so glad that you said mommy dearest, because that again, is, well, you know, there's an exercise that I love to recommend from Midori's book. And anytime you can look into Midori's work, San Francisco legend, fetish kink legend and sex educator, Midori has this book called Wild Side Sex, and she has an exercise in it that she teaches also in femdom classes, but it can apply to whatever your erotic archetype is, where you seek out erotic archetypes in pop culture, in literature, in history, maybe even people that you know, and you can make a list of elements that you want to embody, that you feel that you do embody. And this goes for the dom and the sub, the mommy and the baby, because there's different archetypes of babies as well, right? Like, are you a bratty baby? Are you a fussy baby? Are you a little angel? Are you like mommy's little plaything, like whatever? And yeah, like as a mommy, are you a tyrant? Like mommy dearest, are you interested in nurturing? Like, are you a coach? Are you a soccer mom? Are you a stage mom? You know, what is something that you respond to in culture that then you can also make a list of qualities about, you know, Joan Crawford that you want to embody that maybe you didn't realize were connected to you. But when you start to think about that embodiment of that archetype, you're like, well, wait, you know, maybe we can have a wire hanger scene. but I think, like, if you are both invested in being creative, then think about the elements of creativity, whether you yourself are a, like, theatrically minded person or a literary minded person, or like maybe you're an engineer. Maybe kink is your creative outlet, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So, like, thinking about, like, take it from a theater queer, like, props help, costumes help. And I don't necessarily, like, respond to those things, but I find, so you don't have to. If, like, putting on a French maid outfit, like, leaves you feeling cold or silly, or
they are not cold, they're very short.
They're cold if you try to walk down the street in them. But yeah, you don't have to do these things, but you can try them. And like, changes in atmosphere, also like reading erotic novels together and talking about what you like and what you don't like, because boundaries are just as important for creating structure as desires. And yeah, I love your advice about thinking about where you want to go, because if part of what attracts you to like a mommy baby dynamic is the idea of, you know, like, just part of what people want to access by, you know, with that kind of age play, which, just again, to be 100% crystal clear, is about adults embodying ages other than they currently are, right? But like, embodying the play, the make-believe, the imagination of total innocence, of someone who is just being completely cared for, of somebody who doesn't have to use any executive functioning. You know, that could look a lot of different ways to a lot of different people. And the last piece of advice that I want to give is, you know, the fact that you're asking us this question is a sign that you too are being sexually extroverted and kink extroverted and like reaching out for community and culture. But like, you need a mommy group.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, and if you can't find one, make one.
Right.
Like, serve cookies. Like, come on, it's right there. And make a baby group, you know, or make submissive groups. Like, there are so many like affinity groups out there. And part of that is about having support for something that isn't working. Part of it is about like generating ideas. Some of it is about accountability. Like, you know, it is this way that you're being dominated, like, actually nurturing you, or not? And it, like, is it time to break up? Is it time to pause? Like, oh, and sometimes it's just like, there's not enough cultural representation of these things in a heteronormative world. So, like, just, like, feeling less alone And then you too can offer support and help to others. And sometimes in helping support others, that can generate creativity for you. Because sometimes creativity happens when you're focusing, and sometimes creativity happens when you are taking your mind off it, like when you have a shower idea, right? A shower idea meaning you're not thinking, you're not concentrating, and then the idea comes to you in the shower. Also, you know, take a shower together. you'll save water and come up with some ideas.
Yeah. No, I think like in general, what we're saying is don't take this on alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that like, I think we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to like come up with the idea and fix it and solve it, especially within the confines of this role that they're playing.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying maybe communicate with your sub. Okay, let's see where we want to take this. And is there any room for negotiation? If I do take on this mommy dearest role, are you okay with that? Like, let's see how that dynamic feels for us for a little while, et cetera. And then you're saying too, like, bring in outside community as well. So don't do this in a vacuum. There are people out there who are probably struggling with similar concerns.
Yeah.
And, you know, just the generative space of being around people who are, you know, exploring the same things you are, or who have had that experience in the past and overcame it, mm-hmm. would be great to like pick their brain and also be that person who can offer that to someone else once you get through this.
And the erotic irony of BDSM often is that the sub might actually be the one to take the lead outside of the confines of the dynamic. Now, when you have a 24/7 dynamic, part of the idea is like total power exchange every second of every day, even when you're sleeping in a crib or whatever, an adult-sized crib. They're in an ethical BDSM relationship. It is my opinion that there always needs to be space for the submissive to speak up, and that can be about boundaries, but it can also be like the sub might have, who has better insight into mommy than baby, right? Like the submissive might have like the best ideas to take the lead, maybe counterintuitively, on how this can change. And like, it might be a relief for, even if the idea of the 24/7 exchange is that you both crave that, like being in control or surrendering control all the time. Like, creativity is a really good example of how sometimes the best ideas can come from the person who is doing the surrendering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that. Thank you. I think we gave this person some places to go, some people to see.
Yeah, let us know how it goes.
All right, Tina, I'm so glad you joined us. I want people to know where they can find you on the internet, but also IRL. Your book is coming out later this year, which we're super excited about. I'm definitely getting my copy. So yeah, so where can people find you?
Yeah, so my website is tinahorn.net. That's TINAHORN.net. I am on Twitter and Instagram at TINAHORNSASS. If you want to think about following my sass and not my ass, that's fine with me. And yeah, if you go to my website, you'll be able to sign up for my newsletter, which is really just like when I have a workshop that I'm teaching. I identify now as an educatrix, so teach a lot of online classes, which you can access from anywhere in the world. Yeah, so I have a new comic book, because I do also write genre fiction, called D-Prog. So if you're interested in queer detective fiction, check that out. And then the really big news of 2024 is that Why Are People Into That? The book from Hachette Press is coming out in June. And yeah, if you're interested in BDSM and power dynamics and fetishes and the flesh and the fantasy, you'll definitely want to check out Why Are People Into That? And
can I plug a book that you have?
Yeah, of course.
I recommend your sexting book to people all the fucking time.
Happy to hear that.
So if you're somebody who right now is online dating and you don't know how to take this conversation to sexting, please, Tina Horn's book, Sexting, is out there for you to educate yourself on how to do this with confidence.
Thank you so much. And yeah, that, God, it's wild to think about how that book is almost 10 years old and dated. But I hope it's not dated, because it's really a book about dirty talk that can apply to whatever virtual reality we come up with. But I'm so glad that you plugged that book. And I love your book and recommend it to people all the time. And yeah, that's what's going on with me.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Congrats to you too.
Thank you. All right, that's it for our episode. Thanks so much for sharing your questions with us. And thank you so much, Tina, for being with us.
Thanks, Maisha.
If you need advice about your love life, I'm here to help. Just send me an email or voice memo to sexlife@kcrw.org. See you next week. How's Your Sex Life is a KCRW original podcast. Our producer is Andrea Bautista. Our executive producer is Gina Delvac. This episode was recorded by Phil Richards and mixed by Hope Brush. Our music was created by Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs. Special thanks to Ariel Torres, Mallory McCall, Adam Serrano, Connie Alvarez, Arnie Seipel, and Jennifer Farrow. And last but not least, a huge thanks to our voice actors. We'll let them introduce themselves on their way out.
This is Andrea Bautista. Thanks for listening.
This is Gina Delvac. See you next time for another episode of How's Your Sex Life?